Welcome to the Lesbian Book Club with Claire Lydon. Please enjoy the podcast from My Lesbian Radio.
Hello and welcome to episode 10 of the Lesbian Book Club with me, your host, Claire Lydon. On this episode, we're going to be speaking shortly to lesbian fiction author Kryn Claxton, and you'll hear the fab chat we had very soon. But before we get to that, we're going to look at what's hot in the UK and Amazon lesbian fiction charts, as well as getting an update on the fabulous Elfest weekend that's just happened, a mention for the GCLS Awards, and a couple of personal updates from me. First up then, the Amazon charts. In the UK and the US, the lesbian fiction charts are showing familiar favourites, which is Ace. Georgia Beer's new novel, A Little Bit of Spice, is going great guns. It's about a woman who runs a microbrewery, so Beers writes about beer. Nothing wrong with that, and frankly, it's about time it happened, Georgia, so good work. Also doing well in the UK charts is Kiki Archer's new novel, Too Late, I Love You. And I'm pleased to say that my own book, This London Love, is also a fixture in the top five, which is Ace. So if you have bought it, thank you very much. And if you reviewed it, double thank you very much. UK favourite Jay Winters also has a new book out this month, which is fabulous news. In It Together has a great cover, so go and check it out. I'm sure it will do really well. Robin Alexander's The Trip is also punching well in the UK and US charts. She's a hugely popular author with a vast back catalogue to delve into if you like this one. In the US also, Harper Bliss's welterweight Once in a Lifetime is still doing well. And The Woman Upstairs is still selling on both sides of the pond, despite having those bootcut jeans on the cover, which I brought up a couple of shows ago. So, you know, bootcut, popular, they never go out of fashion. This is what this, enduring popularity of this book is telling me. What else have I been doing since the last book club? Well, the weekend of July the 17th to the 19th was Elfest, which is a lesbian arts and culture festival in Uttoxeter, Staffordshire in the UK. I hosted an indie author panel there with Karen Campbell, H.P. Monroe, Suzanne Edgerton and Sally Edwards. We were on in the art stage tent, which was really fab. It was like a massive wedding marquee tent with chandeliers and everything. It was really posh, like glamping, which, and actually the nearest I came to being in a tent the whole weekend, because frankly I'm a little bit allergic to camping, so my wife and I stayed at a pub down the road, which was fab. Had a nice full English breakfast every morning, super. But anyway, the indie author panel, back to that, it was frankly a raving success. We drew a pretty sizable crowd. Everybody was fantastic on it, and I really enjoyed hosting the panel, which is the first time I've done one, so hopefully I'll get to do one again. But the festival as a whole also had a really special feel about it this year, and I have to say that's probably partly to do as well with the great weather. A bit of sunshine does nobody any harm, does it? Last year it did nothing but rain, which was a real shame. Last year I just remember lots of wet shoes, umbrellas, and a lot of running from, you know, the car to the tent to buildings. But this year the sun shone for the most part, and the festival was set up in a bit differently, in like massive tents and pirate ships, and it just had a very much a festival vibe about it, which was awesome. Highlights for me as well as our indie panel, were Denise's lip syncing competition in the green stage tent on Friday night, which was very cool. And I also really enjoyed Stooshy on stage on Saturday night, banging out their hits and covers. It was really awesome to see them back, actually, because they've been away for a while, and I do really like these girls. So yeah, I hope they have a hit to come back with soon. And the Cowboy Disco on Saturday night was a bit of a hoot, with Stetsons and Cowboy Boots aplenty on site. And, you know, overall, it was just lovely to hang out in a field with lots of lesbians and beer, which is most people's idea of a perfect Saturday night to me. Also a thing since our last book club has been the Golden Crown Literature, I always have a problem with that word, Literature Society Annual Jamboree. GCLS for short, or the Con, as our American friends like to call it, it's like the Oscars for lesbian fiction, and it takes place every year somewhere in America. Last year it was in Portland, Oregon, and this year it was in New Orleans to its mates. So what happens there? Well, the great and the good of the lesbian world gather together to share their wisdom, read from their books, and meet readers. And then they all sing karaoke and give out a bunch of awards. Got to say, it looks like a whole heap of fun. And congratulations to all the finalists, and especially to all the winners. You can find a full list of winners at the GCLS website, but standouts include Andrea Bramall winning for Contemporary Romance with her book Nightingale. So well done, Andrea. Also of note is the fact that I won a Goldie. Yes, I did. Well, part of one at least. A Christmas anthology, Unwrap These Presents, that I contributed a story to, won for Best Anthology. So well done to Ilva Publishing, who put the whole thing together, and it was an honour to be part of it. Finally, this weekend, I'm comparing the Brighton Pride Literature Live tent. Why does everything have that word in it? The Literature Live tent this year. Yes, I'll be hosting it all afternoon. I'm reading from my new novel, This London Love. So come down and say hi at Brighton Pride 2, which takes place on Saturday the 1st of August. I'm really looking forward to hosting the tent. It runs from 2 o'clock till 5 o'clock, and we've got a whole host of great authors for you, including Catherine Hall, Stephen Alcock, and poets like Carol Robson. And from 5 till 6, there's a spoken word event. So it runs for 4 hours. There's tea, there's cake, there's me, there's free bookmarks. It's going to be awesome. And I hope that the sun shines on Brighton just like it did shine on Elfest. But I think it will, and I think it proves that God loves the gays. So marvellous. Anyway, that's enough about me. Let's get to the interview with the fantastic Corinne Claxton. So joining me today on the Lesbian Book Club is author Corinne Claxton, whose third book, Death's Doorway, came out last month. Corinne lives in London, just like me. Hooray! And her books so far have taken in Vampires, Scarlet Thirst, and Supernatural Mysteries, The Supernatural Detective, and Death's Doorway. Corinne is a self-identified butch lesbian, a technician and lighting designer for theatre, a sometime poet, and also a qualified medical herbalist. Welcome to the show, Corinne.
Thank you, Claire.
And does that introduction sort of sum you up to your liking, or is there anything else you would like to add?
That's a perfect summing up of me.
Beautiful.
That's lovely.
Beautiful, beautiful. So have you been up to anything exciting today?
I'm busy at home today, but it is a beautiful sunny day in London, as I'm sure you know.
It is.
And a day when everything seems possible.
Absolutely. And as we know, everything is just going to get better because here we are on the Lesbian Book Club podcast. So if you could tell me a little bit briefly about your background, your writing journey, and how it all started for you.
Okay. Well, I'm really lucky in that both my mum and my dad encouraged me to write when I was still young, still a child. And I grew up with this belief that it was something that I could do. Mm. It was something that I was good at. I'm not sure if everyone agrees with that. Hopefully, it just gave me a confidence, an inner confidence, that is really useful, I think,
as a
writer, because you do have a fair few setbacks, naturally, all artists do, to overcome. So a foundation of confidence is really helpful, and my parents were lovely in that they gave me that. I started writing short stories rather prolifically in the sort of around 2000, the year 2000, and had some of those published. And I met one of the editors at Diva Books at that time, Kathleen Bryson, and she approached me with the idea of turning one of my short stories into a novel. And I did, and Scarlet Thirst was born. And that was back in, it was published first of all back in 2002.
Which right, is, a while ago.
It's quite some time ago. It was re-edited and the second edition was published in 2013.
Right.
So some people will not know that it was about 10 years between the publishing of Scarlet Thirst and then my next novel, The Supernatural Detective.
Yeah.
A bunch of things happened in my personal life, which meant it was impossible for me to write.
Mm-hmm.
But in 2012, I approached Diva Books. I didn't approach them. My British publishers. I approached Bold Strokes Books, American publishers. And to my delight, the Supernatural Detective was accepted by them for publication.
Okay.
And it came out the following year.
So how long did it take you to write The Supernatural Detective?
I started writing that in 2007.
Mm-hmm.
And it was completed by 2010. And then I fiddled around with it for another couple of years. There was a lot of things going on that are very personal for this podcast. They're beyond the remit of this podcast. But needless to say, just to say really that it took me a long time to get the next book out, but I am now back on track.
Yeah.
And I'm aiming to get a book out a year now.
Okay.
And I've been able to do that so far.
No, I mean, you know, everyone's allowed a break, and you know, look at Harper Lee. It hasn't done her any harm, has it?
Well, exactly. Yeah. And, you know, sometimes things are worth the wait, we hope.
Yeah, absolutely. And so you said you've had a host of... I saw you've had one short story there, but you've had a few published, haven't you, by Diva, Bella, Bold Strokes. So did you do them prior to 2002, or was that something you did in the 10-year hiatus? Or?
Yes, some of it was in the 10-year hiatus. Some of it was before, but mm-hmm. some of them that were published subsequent to 2002 were re-edited versions. I did write a lot of short stories in the early 2000s, to the mid 2000s, and then jumped ship and started writing novels. I wrote another novel during that 10-year gap, which is yet to be published. I've shelved that, which was a prequel, actually. To Scarlet Thirst.
Okay.
And I'll get back to it one day, I'm sure.
Maybe in about 10 years' time, you know, a bit of symmetry.
Possibly. Yeah. The first series has sort of been shelved because I'm on the Supernatural Detective series now.
Yeah.
So I don't know when I'll get back to that, but I hope to one day.
Okay. And are you planning on doing any more short stories, or are you firmly ensconced in the novel side of things now?
I'm really, really into the novel writing. Sort of side of things now.
Yeah.
It's not that I wouldn't write a short story, but I am so committed to the novels that I'm writing at current
mm-hmm.
that I haven't got the headspace for anything else.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. I know what you mean. I'm trying to write a novella at the moment, and I'm trying to be a bit, you know, a bit more succinct, and it's difficult to get back to that, having just written three novels in 18 months. I'm like, oh.
It is really different, isn't it? It's
yeah.
like marathon running
mm.
and sprinting. Not that I do either. But I, you know, I know the difference between really running fast up the road for 2 minutes and then trying to run for 15 or half minutes or half an hour.
Yeah.
And that's my running speed.
Yeah, yeah.
It takes some time doing it. So, you know, it's really, really different skill set, I think.
Yeah, yeah. So tell us a bit about your new book, Death's Doorway, which is a continuation of the story of supernatural detective Toni Carson, who's guided by her drag queen spirit guide, Deirdre, which I love. I love that name, by the way.
Deirdre. Yeah, I love Deirdre, that full stop. She's the character that gives me, as a writer, the permission to be really rude and insulting to the rest of my characters, which is a freedom, a beautiful, glorious freedom
mm-hmm.
as a writer that I really enjoy doing. She's my inner drag queen,
right.
quite frankly.
Might she come out at some point and you can become another sort of bow string to your bow.
It could be my my drag, my femme drag side, couldn't it? It could well be. In fact, if I ever do or did in the past, you know, when I was forced to, before I was an adult, to wear anything feminine, I did rather look like a drag queen. So, yeah, that could happen. But what is Death's Doorway about? Well, as you say, Claire, it's the second book in the Supernatural Detective series. Tony Carson is a lighting technician for theatre living in London, and she is psychic. At the beginning of the Supernatural Detective, the first book, she is psychic, but she doesn't know she can see ghosts. And the first book explores her ability that comes out in that book. So she meets Deirdre, the spirit guide appears to her, mm-hmm. and she meets Deirdre, and we see her developing her ghost whispering abilities, if you like.
Okay.
In the beginning of Death's Doorway, Tony has got together with Maya, a medical herbalist, who's American, and they have an ongoing relationship in the second book. Mm-hmm. And part of what I want to do with this series is explore an ongoing relationship between two lesbians. Mm-hmm. The joys, the pitfalls, the communication sort of problems that people, not just lesbians, of course, but people in relationships find. And also the beautiful journey of continuing to find each other desirable and all of that. So that's part of what happens in Death's Doorway 2. Mm-hmm. But terrible things basically befall the third sort of the main character in the series, Jade. Tony's best friend, Jade. Terrible things befall her, and she goes on a scary and rather horrible journey in Death's Doorway, which is hard to describe without a giving away plot.
Okay.
You know, sort of spoilers, as it were.
Okay. But no, it sounds intriguing, though, anyway, and I'm sure that, you know, if people want to know more, they can go and buy the book and read it and find out for themselves. So, and your hero Tony lives in London, as you said, and the city features heavily in both the books. And in my two of my three books as well, London's a lead character. So what do you think makes the city so special?
I love London. London is a city of contrasts. You've got the urban beauty of some of the very sort of modern architecture, Canary Wharf buildings, and some of the new buildings in the city, and the new development at King's Cross, the Queen Elizabeth Park, you know, Olympic Park at Stratford, and all these fascinating and interesting new stuff. And of course, you've got all the ancient and old buildings, the Tower of London, and you have so much art and culture here. My world is art. I write, I work in theatre. I'm surrounded by artists. I'm fortunate to be surrounded by artists. And London is a city of vibrant, new, exciting, and classic culture. It's just absolutely pulsing with it, and with new ideas, with fashion. I just love London, and it's beautiful. It's beautiful to write about and to put into my work things that only Londoners would know, and to write about buildings and places that your average sort of visitor to London might not know about. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's an authenticity, and I hope something interesting for people that don't live in London to read.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure they find in your work too.
Yeah, I was going to say that. Have you had correspondence from people who you know, don't live in London? I mean, they may still live in the UK but don't know London as well. And have you had correspondence sort of saying that they love how you describe London?
Yes, I have had feedback both from Londoners and from people who don't live in the UK. Not so much from people who live in other parts of the UK, but from the States.
Mm-hmm.
I've also had some comments about British slang from Americans in some of the reviews and so on. So I try to explain sort of colloquialisms and slang by having the American characters ask questions. So so therefore it's explained within the work itself.
Ah, okay. I just leave it there. I just leave it to work it out. You know, they can find out what Giddy Kipper is and all that sort of thing.
Well, I think that's great, and I personally, I don't mind that if I'm reading an Australian book or an American book for that mm-hmm. matter, or any book from any place. Google is only a few taps away, isn't it? It's not hard to find out these days, and it's a learning process. It's engaging with the book to do that. However, I don't think that everybody is as keen to do that as I am.
Yeah.
And I did battle a little bit with my Bold Strokes editor on the first book about keeping British sayings in and not always explaining them. Mm-hmm. And then I got this review saying it was really hard to plough through all British slang, but it's worth it, grudgingly. So I thought, yeah, actually, I can see your point.
Yeah.
Not everybody is going to, and I wouldn't want to put people off.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, no. But it's every writer's choice to do what you think is right, I think. You've got to make that choice for yourself.
Yeah, no, I think the important thing is really keeping it all in there and making it authentic, like you say. And you said that, obviously, this is a series. So is there another book coming in this series?
Yeah, I'm plotting out the third book. I am just getting a proposal together now from my publishers for the third book in the series, and I'm almost plotted it out in a loose way.
Okay.
So yeah, definitely a third. I'm hoping this will be I'm seeing this as like at least a 5-book series. I hope so.
Oh, 5, okay, cool. So the lesbian relationship in it is going to stretch over that, so you're really going to get into the nuts and bolts of it.
Yeah,
cool.
Yeah.
And your books, as you are, shot through with warmth and humour, and Deirdre, is that drag queen based on anyone you know, or is it, like, as you said, your inner drag queen?
I think she's mostly my inner drag queen. I don't have anybody in mind when I create characters. There may be a tiny aspect of somebody that I know or have met in some of my characters, but generally they are just, you know, a product of everything that I've experienced, I guess. You know, mm-hmm. So I wouldn't like to say I just make them entirely up, because I think we're all influenced by everything that we do, see, watch, experience ourselves, you know. So she's not based on anybody in particular, but I am lucky to have worked with, particularly in theatre, some wonderful, very out and proud camp gay men, and I'm sure that some of their attitudes and kind of personas have influenced the writing of Deirdre.
Yeah. I think we can safely say that, yeah. And your first book, just getting back to that, was about a butch vampire who falls for a femme human. So they say that your first novel is your most autobiographical. So judging actually by what you've just said about Tony, maybe that is a bit more autobiographical. But is there any truth that in the first one?
Well, I really can't reveal the sources of whether that's true or not. But and all I'm going to say is it's a sunny day and I'm sitting indoors talking to you. But I think the rumours that I'm undead are greatly exaggerated.
Right, okay. I'm with you on that one. I'm with you. So tell me a bit about your writing process these days, because you're working as well. So is there a certain time of day you write best, and a certain place? Do you change it up?
We have an office at home that I write in sometimes, and other times I write downstairs where there's a bigger and better music system, because I like to have music when I write.
Okay, what kind of music do you listen to?
All kinds of things, but I'm mostly into indie and alternative at the moment. Things like Florence the Machine, Evanescence, Golf Rap.
Mm-hmm. Love Florence's new album.
Yeah, awesome. So do I. I think she's just getting bigger and better and more beautiful.
Yeah. we're all agreed on that.
But I think my writing time is restricted a little bit, because not just working, but also I've got nearly a 4-year-old, a 3 and 3/4-year-old son. Mm-hmm. So that having him has been beautiful and joyous and wonderful, but it has curtailed what time I have to write.
Mm-hmm.
And he's in nursery 2 days a week, and hopefully, you know, if I can jiggle that so that I'm not working those days, those days of my writing time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And they're just like a life, you know, they're wonderful, beautiful, precious time for me.
Mm-hmm. And then so you just do it whenever you get the time, really. There's not a certain time of day that you work better.
No, though I am a night person, but I write really badly at night. The irony is, in theatre I work really well into the late hours, but in terms of writing, even though if it was left to me, I wouldn't get up in the early morning. But if I do get up in the early morning, and certainly if I write in the morning, that's when it seems to flow best. So go figure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's I was talking recently about it, and because I too used to be quite a night owl, but now I find that I write better in the morning. So I think it can change. And when you write, do you write straight on the screen or do you write handwritten first?
Absolutely straight onto the screen. In fact, I have a writing software that I use that I find absolutely wonderful because it stores everything in the one folder, if you like. It stores all your notes, research, everything. So I just fall in love with it, and it organises me, keeps it all organised. I know where everything is.
Is that Scrivener?
Yeah. It is. I didn't know if you were branding on your programme. So
it's
being,
all right.
Really good.
We're not the BBC.
Free Scriveners.
Yeah.
So I say Scrivener.
No, I'm a recent convert as well, even though it did lose my latest novel about a week before I was about to publish. But I had a panicky 3 hours, and then it found it again.
It was a heart-stopping
time. Moment. Yeah. So, Kryn Claxton, is that your real name or is it a pseudonym?
No, that is my real name.
It is your real name?
Yeah, okay. That's my real, true and legal name.
That is a very cool name then in that case. So well done your parents.
Thank you. I like it because there aren't very many of them.
No, yeah, definitely. And you've also, in your past life, had some recipes published in the Butch Cookbook, which I was very intrigued by. So can you tell me a bit more about that and what recipes you put in?
Yes, I'm actually, you can't see it because we're on audio only, but I'm holding the Butch Cookbook now.
Okay.
Which was by Sue Hardesty and Nell Ward, and Lee Lynch had something to do with it because she's on the cover as well. And that's not surprising if you know Lee Lynch. And it's just a collection of recipes which were all submitted by Butch people, a lot of them writers, actually, Butch writers. So, and my recipes are barbecued chicken and garlic prawns, I think. Garlic and chili prawns, I think.
All right.
In there.
Okay. And so was there a theme like the Butch Cookbook? What makes food butch? I was intrigued by that.
Well, it's interesting because there isn't anything especially butch. If you look at the recipes, they are basically recipes that you might find anywhere because, of course, butchers are a collection of people who are all represent all sorts of persuasions, if you like, and sensitivities, and they're not all big, rugged, beefy recipes.
Right.
But mine is chicken.
Yeah.
It's barbecue. And yeah. I am quite butch, Claire, so, you know. But right. I also have a recipe in there for a mousse bouche. Yes.
Check you out.
Fiddles about with toasted almonds and all sorts, yeah. So, you know, and marinates, olives.
So if I came round to your house, what would you cook me for dinner? That was what I was thinking was.
Well, it would depend on your dietary requirements. Is there any? Are you vegetarian? Vegan?
I'm not. I just don't like nuts or goat's cheese. So don't serve me that, and I'm good to go.
Okay. Well, I might cook you something like, it's nice and summery, isn't it? So I might cook you something like Thai marinated prawns with scallops.
Mm, that sounds good.
Followed by we're in barbecue season, so I'm tempted to say barbecue chicken. Because this dish is very nice because you marinate the chicken in like a barbecue tomato-y jerk sauce.
Yeah.
With lime juice and olive oil. Perhaps even sesame oil if you have it, because that adds a slightly nuttier flavour. You marinate that for at least a day.
Oh, a day, right, okay.
And then grill it on the barbecue. And I'd serve that up with either some flatbread, you know, sort of Turkish flatbread,
mm-hmm.
Or perhaps with a Mexican salad, which is basically a pilau salad. Pilau rice, Mexican rice, with pilau rice with sweet corn and peas in it.
It sounds great. I'm free on Saturday. Is that
okay.
good?
Oh, it's Richard Bade.
Yeah. Okay. Great. I was going to say as well. Are you a fan of, you said that you like barbecue, so are you a fan of Adam Richman and all the US food porn currently on TV?
Well, I googled Adam Richman because I'd never heard of him, I have to be honest, and I haven't seen any of his programmes, but I do like cooking programmes.
Yeah.
Generally, sort of, I watch a bit of Jamie Oliver every now and then. Nigella, though, has to be my favourite.
She's proper food porn.
And I know that she wasn't very nice to people sometimes in recent, you know, not in relatively recent newspaper reports and everything, but she's so lovely on her programmes.
I agree. And in our house as well, we're big fans of cookery shows. I think me and my wife would like to make a trip around America just to eat all the fantastic sandwiches and barbecue that they have on all these shows.
Yeah. You come back about... might have to book an extra seat on the plane.
Absolutely. He had to give it up because he was, I think he put on about 5 or 6 stone, so he couldn't do it anymore. So there you go. So I'm interested that we touched on the label Butch a bit earlier, but it's not really a common reference point of many lesbians these days, with sexuality and gender being viewed as more fluid. What traits make up a Butch in your eyes?
Well, that's interesting. What traits make up a Butch? I believe in self-definition, so I can only talk about myself, so I would never label somebody else as Butch or not, because mm-hmm. that's for them to decide, because I might not consider somebody Butch and then they say they are
true
to them, so, or I might think they are and they say I am absolutely not Butch. Butch way. For me, Butch is my gender.
Yeah,
that's the main difference, really. It's not a sexuality. Rather than defining as a woman or a man, I define as Butch.
Okay.
And my definition of Butch is, for me, is a masculine female who is not taking hormones or not at current time wanting to have surgery to transition.
Yeah.
I am and have been for some years mistaken for a man by the general population from time to time, especially when wearing my beloved suits.
Mm-hmm.
And some could say, who can blame, you know, who you can't, you know, so what if it's understandable if a masculine woman wearing a suit is going to be mistaken for a man. And I'm not sure how much of that has formed my identity, my Butch identity. You know, continually being mistaken for a man
mm-hmm.
by the general public may have shaped my identity as mm-hmm. much as I feel masculine.
Yeah.
So it's an ongoing sort of discovery, but it's something that I'm comfortable with and proud of. And there is a long history within the queer community and the gay community of femininity and masculinity being explored and not restrained to your biological gender, that we have more freedom within our communities to look at those, the spectrum of gender, than straight people seem to have.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't think it's being mistaken for a man happens to a load of people I know, and has happened to me quite a few times as well. So that cuts across quite a few people.
Yeah, people's experience, especially yeah. sort of your average Joe lesbian, as it were.
Yeah. Cool. And You've also written poetry in your past life as well. Is that something that you're planning to do again, or are you still doing?
I write the odd poem from time to time, but again, you know, we were talking before about short stories and novels, and it's a discipline that is so different from novel writing. It's almost the sort of opposite end of the scale, I think, writing a poem and writing a novel, that I find it a bit hard to jump from one to the other.
Mm-hmm.
Poems sort of burst out from me from time to time, but I'm not particularly focused on publishing poems.
Okay.
At the moment.
Okay. Yeah, it's something that I've thought about doing, but I've never done it, so I don't know if I'd be able to do it or not. But I'm increasingly drawn to poetry, so yeah.
You should.
Yeah.
Try it.
Maybe I will.
Sometimes it can shape your other writing because it makes you really, really focus on every single word.
Mm-hmm.
Then you go back to the 80 or 100,000 words you've written in your novel and check all of those, Claire.
Yeah.
Take those school with there.
I'll bring it round for dinner on Saturday.
Okay.
And what do you think of the explosion in lesbian fiction over the last few years, especially with the advent of indie publishing?
Fabulous, actually, because I ran YLEF, the York Lesbian Arts Festival, for several years, from 2007 to 2009, and that was just on the brink, I think, of the explosion that you just talked about. And I think the more the better. It's wonderful. We still need to have lesbian books. We have not got to the point where sexuality doesn't matter anymore, because there are so few lesbian writers represented in mainstream publishing or in the mainstream book charts.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very few.
Yeah, no, definitely.
Cross into those mainstream charts. And we need, as readers need lots of lesbian fiction. And I think that it improves us all. The more writing there is out there, the more books I get to read, influences me and inspires me, and it's positive and affirming. It's a beautiful thing, wonderful thing.
Good. Yeah, no, well said. No, I totally agree. I think, some people are a bit naysaying, a bit down on the whole indie publishing, and as well, new sort of smaller independent publishing houses springing up. But I think the more the merrier. It's not the demand is there, so I think readers are enjoying it as well.
I think it's a little bit like there's a word for it when you get a collection of shops in an area and it becomes known for that thing. So like a jeweler's shop might open, and then some more jeweler's shop opens, and then people realise, oh, you go to that place for jewellery.
Mm-hmm.
So the more lesbian, independently published, self-published and small presses there are, the more that people find out about other lesbian writers.
Yeah.
We help each other that way.
Yeah.
Even if on Amazon people buy a book and you look at what else they've bought.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Definitely. All of that helps each other.
Yeah.
So it's all good.
And are you a fan of Lesvic? Are you an avid reader?
Yes, I read as much as I can. Given that I don't have an awful lot of time, so I don't read as much as I'd like to, but I usually have a book on the go.
Mm-hmm. And is there any particular one that you recall from recent times?
Well, I'm reading Bruceville by Robin Vinton at the moment, which is a really interesting psychological, very narrative, very character-driven story of woven secrets and lies, set in New Zealand.
Okay, cool. I haven't heard of that. I'll have to check it out. And which words or phrases do you most overuse in your everyday and in your writing?
Yeah, I saw that. I wasn't I don't really know, but I'm sure if that other people would read my work, it would jump out at them. Probably if you asked my Bold Strokes editor.
I was going to say, it's probably your editor. Yeah.
One thing that I thought about when I looked at that question was that one thing I do is that I sort of over-describe sometimes, in that I put too many adjectives into a sentence.
Mm-hmm.
So I might say somebody was very excited. And then when I look back, and I do my own at first sort of couple of edits, I'll cut all that out so that the sentence would then read, she was excited. Because I don't need to say she's very excited, do I? You know, it reads fine that she's excited. It gives more power to the word excited if I stop loading up the amount, you know, the percentage of excitement that she feels. So that's one trait of mine that I'm trying to tidy up.
Okay. But there's a lot of excitement in your novels. That's what we're taking from this.
Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah.
Well, my character's excited. Yeah. Doesn't mean that there is no. The Supernatural Detective Series is hopefully quite exciting because there's danger all around.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like, you know, danger, romance, drag queens. It sounds like a great read to me. And a final question for you. If you could be the love child of any two writers, alive or dead, who would you choose?
Jane Austen and Sarah Dreyer.
Good pairing. Why those two in particular?
Jane Austen, for her time, was a real breakthrough writer. And she was very true to a community that she knew very well. And she described them in all, you know, warts and all, and she's very, very, very character driven in her work. And she's also very descriptive.
Yeah.
Well, she was. She's not still alive, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And Sarah Dreyer wrote the Stoner McTavish series, which influenced me hugely when I read that, in that the way that she wrote for that time, and even now, is quite groundbreaking. She had multiple points of view. She had a lot of thoughts, of the characters' thoughts, but it was very animated. Mm-hmm. Her way of writing is very animated.
Mm-hmm.
And her character, again, very, very character-driven. The characters just jump up off the page. If you get a chance, she's unfortunately died as well.
Okay.
But I don't know if you have read any of the Stoner McTavish books, but people get a chance. It's a funny, feel-good read. Really, really good read.
Okay, no, that's a good recommendation for everybody. And you said that you're plotting book three in the Supernatural Detective series. So is that the next book we can expect from you?
The next Supernatural Detective book, I'm hoping, will be out towards the end of next year or early 17,
okay.
If you know, depending on my schedules with it.
And finally, where can people find out more about you?
I've got a website, crinclaxton.com. I'm on Facebook. I'm on your podcast.
You are indeed.
I've got all the pages on Goodreads and Amazon. My phone number is.
Yeah. And come round for a barbecue on Saturday night.
Everyone who's listening, I expect you at 8 o'clock. If you could just confirm so I know numbers, that would be helpful. Thank you.
There you go. Well, there's an invitation for everybody. We'll see you around at Crin's on Saturday night. Well, thank you very much. Thank you so much for taking the time to do this, Crin. It's been fabulous chatting with you.
And
good luck with the new books when they come out.
Thank you, Claire.
All right.
Good to be talking with you. Yeah. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Take care.
That's the end of this lesbian book club. So this is me, Claire Lydon, signing off. Just a reminder, my new novel, This London Love, is out now. So if you fancy getting a copy, or if you fancy reading any of my other books, London Calling or The Long Weekend, you can find out more at www.clairelydon.co.uk, or just look me up on Amazon, Kobo, iTunes or any other of the digital outlets. I am also on Twitter and Facebook, so come and follow me or friend me on either of those platforms. I love friends. I love followers. Who doesn't? It's a beautiful world we live in, everyone. Join me next time for more hot book club action, and in the meantime, enjoy the summer sunshine.